BBC Six Music Podcasts.
Six Music.
This is a free download from the BBC.
Find out more at bbc.co.uk/sixmusic.
And now, Adam and Joe.
Dum 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 dum.
Joe.
Adam dum 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 dum.
Joe.
Adam dum dum dum.
Joe.
Adam dum 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 dum.
Joe.
Adam dum 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 dum.
Joe.
Adam dum 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 dum. Adam dum 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 dum.
Adam.
Hey, how you doing, listeners? Welcome. That was suggested by Sean Dixon. He lives in Liverpool. He says, "Hi, Adam. Hi, Joe. For your intro duet, I thought you could recreate the can-can."
Well, you thought wrong. We couldn't. I mean, it's getting quite immature and, you know, how much longer can this go on is what I'm thinking.
Oh, really?
I mean, I'm just speculating. If we continued with this type of intro and, say, projected forward a year.
Yeah.
Summer 2010.
Just getting going.
What kind of thing do you think is going to be happening?
Just crossing over. But in a year, it'll just be... See, this is our problem as a duo, you and I.
We give up too early.
Give up too early, just as the thing is
Getting to the tipping point.
It's like we get put off by the first person that says, you know, that Stephen thing is a little bit annoying. We go, oh, maybe we should stop.
They're right.
That's where we're going wrong.
You've got to ram it down people's throats. Steamroll it.
You just ignore the naysayers. As soon as it starts feeling tired to us, that's when it's getting good for everybody else.
But that
that's how TV works.
Do you think? Do you think? It's true, isn't it? It's true. Okay, I'm with you. That's the technique. Hey, welcome to the podcast, listeners, an assemblage of the highlights, and we use that term in a sort of comparative sense, of this week's live show on BBC Six Music. All sorts of thrilling things happened during the show. There was a terrific section on grunting. There was an exciting chit-chat all about Britain's Got Talent. There was some Bowie chit-chat as well, wasn't there? All kinds of business.
It was good stuff. And we are... I've got nothing to say. I started speaking and we are
going
blancmange.
Cricket pitch.
You see, I couldn't even think of a new word. I just had to repeat the one that you said. I've got absolutely nothing.
Cricket. You said boat, blancmange and cricket pitch.
The other word I thought of was tree.
That's good, man. You should get a job on the radio.
Yeah, you reckon? Boat. Blancmange. Have you heard Boat Blancmange Cricket Pitch Tree? That is a good show. What happens on it? I mean, they just say those words over and over again, but it's the way they do it.
It's hard to say a string of words that are completely disconnected.
They don't always say them in the same order. Cricket pitch, blancmange, boat tree. But they always say them. The worst show
that
was...
That could be our catchphrase.
Yeah. The worst show was when they missed out Blancmange one week.
That was disappointing.
That was a shame. But the best show was when they said cricket pitch twice one
Yes.
week. That was amazing. That was a special. Listen, let's get on with the podcast of Boat Blancmange Cricket Pitch Tree. Hope you enjoy it. We'll be back halfway through for Retro Text the Nation.
Hello again from the big British castle. We hope you're happy with the service that you're paying for. If you're not, please let us know and we will change it all. Because we don't want you to knock the castle down with giant snakes.
Last week I was complaining about the fact that I lost one of my saddlebags while I was cycling. And no one in London, in this great city, alerted me to the fact or jumped in a cab and chased after me with the saddlebag.
Disgusting.
It's a total disgrace. Someone else emailed us this week with a slightly different type of story, but similar. This is from Andrew Bird. He said, "I have sympathy for your saddlebag flying off your bike. I also had a similar experience. Not a single person on the street alerted me to the fact that my cat, Brian, was balanced on the roof of my car for over a kilometre. It wasn't until I stopped at traffic lights that Brian slid in through the sunroof."
They sent a photo, didn't they?
Yeah, after clinging onto the roof rack. They sent, yes, attached is a picture of Brian in his favourite position for long journeys.
And Brian looks very elegant sitting in the middle of the back seat, but free of any sort of cat box or basket. He's just loose in the car.
That's the problem.
We used to do that as a family when I was a kid, when we'd go on holiday to Devon. We'd release the cat in the car.
Uh-huh.
And it still haunts me in my dreams and nightmares, the idea of the cat escaping.
Yeah.
Because that used to be the thing. When you'd stop to go to the loo or go to the services, you had to be very careful or the cat would get out.
Right.
And cats aren't very good in alien territory, you know. It freaks them out.
Sure.
And I used to be really worried about it as a kid, so much so that I still dream about it as a kind of Freudian neuroses.
That's one of your basic anxiety tropes.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Cat loss.
So when I saw that picture, I was slightly unsettled at the idea of Brian loose in the car and maybe, you know, maybe he might squeeze through a window.
That's horrific, though, that he was driving along with a cat on the roof.
No, but they're not saying the cat was loose on. They don't just put the cat on the roof rack. Yeah. Presumably, is that what they're saying?
He was hanging onto the roof rack.
No, they set the cat not in a box or anything, just on the roof and then drove off.
I think they accidentally...
Or is it just sitting? Yeah,
he's just hanging on.
Really?
Yeah, he's wild on the roof.
Oh my gosh.
He's partying on the roof rack.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't think cats had that much sort of self-control or, you know.
He's a genius cat, obviously, Andrew Bird's cat. I mean, we should stress that don't under any circumstances test the genius
of
your cat.
No, this could become some sort of a craze, you know.
By putting it on the roof.
Like in New York when kids train surfed and other really fatal things like that.
Cat surfing.
Cat surfing. We don't want to encourage that.
No way, Jose.
That's awful.
That's terrible.
But cats are territorial. They rely on knowing exactly where they are and where everything is. Mm-hmm. It would freak a cat out to put it on the top of a car and
roof
drive off. It's like people who have their cats on leads and take them shopping and stuff.
Well, it could have been a kind of Johnny Knoxville stunt cat. He might have relished the challenge.
No such thing.
Is there?
You can't get cats to do anything. You can't train them.
But they are so agile and nimble. You know, a roof rack, you would just be thinking, I can deal with that. It's not a problem.
Yeah,
kilometer,
that's true.
Not a problem. Do you think anyone's accidentally done that with a baby?
Yes.
I mean, someone at some stage. Because the thing is, mums, at that stage, when their babies are very small, they're so tired and overwhelmed with exhaustion sometimes.
You pop the baby on the roof of the car like you would a cup of coffee.
Like your keys.
Yeah, while you get your keys out and open the door.
Drive off for a little while. Doi! Stop too fast.
Do you know what the key is to both of those situations is make sure your cat and your baby are wearing a cape. Because then when the car's in motion, it looks much cooler.
Outside my tiny little cafe in Paris, you'll find two men called Adam and Joe. All day they sit just talking away. Sometimes I listen and hear what they say. Blah, 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 waffles. Blah, 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 pancakes. They're making a podcast apparently. It sounds like a load of old crap to me. Oh, I am making the joke.
That's Al Green. What more do you want from me?
That sounded like classic Rev.
Yeah, he went back to his old school demeanor.
Everyone should do that.
Yeah, just take it back to the roots.
Take it
back. Do you know what I mean?
You know, as an art project, you could even justify it as an art project. If Bowie tried to make an album that sounded as similar as possible to Hunky Dory, I would be delighted.
That's very true.
You know, and he could say, if people said, you just run out of ideas. No, incorrect. I'm doing it as an art.
Absolutely wrong.
That's absolutely wrong. I'm doing it as an art project. I'm trying.
I've never heard anything quite as wrong as that.
Me and Eno have gone back into the studio to try and reconstruct as closely as possible Hunky Dory, even though Eno was not involved originally with Hunky Dory, but that's part of the superlative nature of the project. And we're very pleased with the results.
Oh, there is in the garden.
He's not around enough saying stupid things to Bowie anymore, is he?
No.
It's a long time since I've seen him on the telly using a word like theatricality.
Theatricality.
Or superlatitativeness.
Too much is never enough. A wizard, wizard, wizard.
Oh, wizard, wizard. Fuzzy, wuzzy, was a bear. Fuzzy, wuzzy, had a bear.
Okay, listen, we've got to get into Text the Nation, don't we? We've got a new jingle.
We
Who's this from?
We have a new jingle. It's from Paul McDonald from Coventry.
Paul McDonald had a jingle.
He says to us, "It is with blind optimism that I send you this Text the Nation jingle. I have taken inspiration from my youth and composed it in the style of the old Commodore 64 computer that I and thousands of others loved dearly. I hope you like it. I hope you consider it as worthy as the other fantastic compositions that you have received from listeners and play it." So here we go, Paul. This is brilliant. One of my favourite things about it is the fact that it gets pretty incomprehensible when it tries to do the little bit of sort of call and response towards the end of
Let's
the jingle.
Let's check it out.
Explanation, text. What if I don't want to? Explanation, but I'm losing English. It doesn't matter.
That's beautifully produced.
That's the sound of a computer having a massive nervous breakdown.
Mm.
Very nice indeed. Paul McDonald, thank you very, very, very much.
That's a dad joke, isn't it? That's the joke of a man who's got young children. Nursery rhyme based. I'm not saying it's bad. Kids out there will love it. Paul McDonald with Paul instead.
Who's begging for it? Okay, so Text the Nation this week. This is inspired by the fact that I brought in my video camera a few weeks ago just to film myself and Joe doing this show. I don't know why I did. I just thought, you know, I'm an archivist. I like to tape things, film things, take photographs. That's the kind of person I am. And I was just checking that the tape had recorded okay afterwards. And I just was appalled by the things I was doing while we were off air, while the music was playing.
Yeah.
All the disgusting little bits and pieces that I was doing there while I was sat in my chair. I still had my beard then. I've just shaved because I'm doing a TV show that requires me to shave. But I had my beard and I had the fork from a fruit salad. And I was just sort of combing it through my beard like a little kind of beard comb.
So this is kind of disgusting habits you have,
disgusting
right?
Disgusting habits.
Disgusting habits other people have. And things that you just enjoy doing, sort of picking or preening at your body, maybe, or it needn't even be that. It can be broader than that.
Yeah.
But sort of revolting things you do without realizing it,
exactly.
or you see other people do.
And this is something, my wife is actually away at the moment, so
open season.
I think I can talk. She's in France, so I can talk.
We should have just done a special
ragging on my wife. But she does this thing when we're watching TV, she's all curled up like a big cat on the sofa. Mm. And she, for a long time, I didn't know what the heck she was doing. She's like, it looks as if she's teasing a single hair on her head, right? So she'll start at the root of the hair, and then she will tease it.
Don't
until...
tell me she's pulling some sort of a skin lump or flake out.
Bongo.
She's teasing it through the hair.
Yeah. She's located...
Bongo. What comes out at the other end?
She's located a little scab. Popped it off there. Oh man, I would get badly busted if she ever knew I was
really
talking about this.
Well, people she knows listen to this, don't they?
Please don't tell her. Seriously, if anybody knows her, please don't tell her, because my life wouldn't be worth living. But I told someone else about this and they said, yeah, I do that. You know, fondle around on the scalp, because it's quite fun sometimes. You fondle around, you think, oh, there's a little lumpy there, I'll have a little go.
It should be said, your wife's got particularly fulsome hair, very sort of curly.
Marge Simpson hair.
Yeah, quite a lot of hair. So there's a lot going on in there.
Yeah.
And there are areas of mystery.
Certainly, there could be all kinds of little sandwiches in there. But she's, I think, I said, what are you doing when you tease your hair like that? And she said, I said, you're not like getting little scabs and things out, are you? Yeah, she said.
What does she do with them once they're out? That's the most troubling thing.
I think she feeds them to the children.
Does she?
Yeah, that's what mothers do, isn't it?
Oh, puts them in an omelette.
Like birds, you know, that's the kind of disgusting thing that birds do. They
that's
eat,
nice.
Vomit worms into their children's mouths. That's a nice image, isn't it?
Yeah.
For a Saturday morning. I'm sorry about that, but that's nature.
You know what? This is going to be a slightly grotesque Text the Nation. So if you want to use made-up words or creative language to describe revolting things in a slightly more palatable way, feel free. The one thing I think I do a lot, I'm slightly obsessed with pulling out nose hairs.
Are you?
So I do like to try and grab a nose hair.
Rather than trim them, you'd never use
trimmers.
Well,
no, I might trim them if I'm in the bathroom doing my, you know, grooming routine.
Yeah.
But when out and about, for instance, or while a record's playing on this program,
have a little fondle.
I might want to go for a nose hair.
Have a little rummage.
And there's nothing more satisfying than putting both, you know, both fingertips up the nostril.
Like big tweezers.
Yeah. Oh, I nearly got one just then. I did as well. Oh. And then you get it and you tug it and it came out. Look at that. Oh, wizard.
With a little white bit at the end.
It doesn't have a white bit at the end, but it does. No, you're right. It does. And I love it. I love the little moment of agony when it pops out, but then the satisfaction as the agony recedes and the inspection of the hair. It's the kind of thing you can get really carried away with.
You know, the absolute most painful ones are the ones just on the tip, on the bridge.
Oh, they're the ones to go. Sort of under the rim.
Yeah.
As the toilet duck advert would say.
Under the rim of the tip of the nose, yeah.
Yeah, it's true. So is that a disgusting disgusting habit. It's slightly disgusting. It means you come away with a bit of yourself in your hand. Sure. That's always the problematic.
Especially when you're talking about the white bit. I would say that certainly qualifies for today's Textination.
Just talking.
From time to time, we've discussed the excellent TV show The Wire on this program. Anyway, it occurred to me that there might well be a new generation of police in Baltimore after the success of The Wire, mainly made up of kind of middle-class Wire fans whose children have grown up and they don't, you know, have anything else particularly to do, no reason to stay in their boring jobs. They need a thrill injection, right?
Right.
So they think to themselves, I'm going to go to Baltimore and I'm going to join the police department and help clean up Baltimore.
Right.
You know? So I think if you went out there, you would definitely find a few people mixed in McNulty types sort of saying, this mope, that mope is going for a re-up from the top stash over there.
There's these wire gags.
This is what you say if you're part of the Baltimore police.
Right.
This is street talk, Joe.
Right.
That mope's going for a re-up from the top stash.
What's a mope? Moped?
No. A mope is like a...
Someone moping around.
I think it's, it's a sort of crim, you know?
A criminal. Yeah, a mope.
Yeah. A mope. He's going for a re-up. Do you know what that is?
No.
He's resupplying.
Right.
From the top stash.
Oh, so he's getting...
He's going for... he's resupplying from the dirty drug stash at the top of one of the buildings.
Right.
Yeah? Yeah. That mope's going for a re-up from the top stash. He's good police. He's really good police. I mean, that speaks for itself, right? But that's how
He's a good policeman.
He's a good policeman.
Right.
But if you're in the police force, you don't say that because that's too civilian.
No. So if you're a drug dealer and you're saying someone's good police, what does that mean? That
you've
he's
been
corrupt?
Fairly, no.
He's a good man. He's a fair man.
He's been fairly treating the mopes. Mm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Dickinson, he's really good police. Yeah. Oh, Tristram. Yeah, he's very good police indeed. Mm. Absolutely. Rollo, very good police.
Mm-hmm.
Benji, he's not very good.
It all seems to have been populated by public school boys from the Kensington area.
Yeah, I'm not saying that everyone who watches The Wire is a public school boy from the Kensington area. I'm just saying some of them might have got through there.
Right.
Because the message is spreading amongst the middle and upper classes about The Wire. He might lose his job behind that shiz, but it's all in the game, y'all.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing they would be saying.
Yeah.
Out there in Baltimore. I guarantee you, if you went out to Baltimore today and hung around on the corners, that's the kind of thing you'd be getting.
Well, so, because you're sort of hoping that because it's become very famous and watched a lot, I'm just trying to make sense of this, that because the show is popular, they might have stopped behaving like they do in the show. Is that what you're saying? No. I don't understand. This just feels like a very in-depth joke for viewers of The Wire.
Yeah, I like
the fact that I've only seen it in passing.
I like the fact that this is a kind of reverse of Torpedo Commander Cornish ruining my... I like the fact that you're trying to support it.
I'm doing my best. I'm trying to find a way in.
It's nice. No, it was... shall I deconstruct it for you?
Yeah. All right. Make it really obvious.
Okay, I'll
please.
Make it really obvious. The joke, such as it was...
was we should have this on the digital readout.
Yeah,
you could explaining just explaining it. The jokes. Yeah, for people that don't.
The joke, such as it like was, me. Was that a lot of middle class people
watch The Wire,
and
what if they
are
were in
seduced
it?
By the jargon and the lingo and the excitement?
The street.
What if those people went out to join the Baltimore police force?
Yes. And that would be quite a juxtaposition.
Wouldn't that be weird?
Yeah.
Imagine the things they would say.
Yeah. Now I'm getting it. It's hitting me like waves. Oh! I'm thinking back to the things you said. And
Mope's going for a re-up from the top staff. Thanks a lot, man. Thanks for the support.
God. I really tried.
Adam and Joe.
Naughty.
Ooh. My nipples.
Listen, we got an email a few weeks ago from a listener called Tom, aged 15, in New Zealand. And this is a little more podcast-related because we've got a lot of little jingly stings in the podcast that we don't use in the live show.
Yeah.
But Tom in New Zealand said, "Dear Adam and Joe, as an avid listener to your podcast, I especially enjoy your self-created jingles. So much so that I did a school assignment on them for music. The assignment was to study and analyse a set of songs from the same composers. So naturally, I thought of my collection of jingles and song warses that I'd saved up from your podcasts.
Naturally.
Naturally. My teacher was much impressed with not only my ingenuity, but also your musical prowess. So much so that I got an E, which means excellence and is obviously very good.
Yeah.
Cheers, Tom from New Zealand. Now, I'd like
Tom.
To know, is he being sarcastic there?
Yeah.
Does E really mean excellence in New Zealand?
No.
No. James, you don't know. You went to Australia, not to New Zealand.
They don't have a separate rating system just because they're Kiwis.
They might do.
E is just above a fail.
And I would like to, well, I'd like to hear the truth from Tom. I'd also like to see that essay.
So would I.
The assignment. Please, Tom, send us that essay. And if anybody else ever dares to use this program or the contents of this program in any kind of educational context, we'd like to hear about it.
Yeah, we'd like to see what you've done.
Because it seems peculiar and strange and stupid. That's
hey,
much.
Incidentally, while I'm here, I should say that it looks as if I might be wrong about poo-pooing the ratings system for Kiwi exams.
Matt in West Harrow says it's the EGSU rating system. Excellent, good, satisfactory, unsatisfactory. It was used for stuff before GCSE level
is
in the
really
UK.
Is that really true?
Well, you can never tell what's true anymore.
No. I mean, we're partly to blame by being stupid.
Yeah, we'll believe anything that anyone texts us. We'll take at face value. Oh, yes. Yeah.
Oh, apparently we were wrong. Apparently we were right. But apparently, yes.
Hello, Pete Doherty here. Just like to say how much I enjoy listening to the Adam and Joe podcast. Whenever life's got me down, it always brings a chuckle to my face.
If you listen to the podcast, you might have heard that I spent last weekend, the bank holiday weekend, catching up on movies.
Oh, yes.
I got a big stack of Wicked Blu-rays.
Australia, Rise of the Lycans.
Rise of the Lycans. That's the one I'd like to focus on. Underworld, Rise of the Lycans. I got a whole lot of movies. Defiance, I got. That didn't last very long in the player.
You got the Vinnie Jones one, didn't you?
I got Midnight Meat Train. That lasted about 20. Most of them lasted about 20 minutes.
Why did you rent Midnight Meat Train?
It was fun. It was just a lot of fun. I like the director, Takashi
Miike.
Of
course,
It wasn't very good, though. Most of them got ejected. The one that I watched all the way through that really held my attention, though, was Underworld, Rise of the Lycans.
Yeah.
The third film in the Underworld trilogy, an exciting sort of Shakespearean melodrama about vampires versus werewolves.
Have you seen the other two films?
No.
Why the heck would you go for number three?
Because it was the origin story. It's a prequel. I don't know why.
Prequels are always good, aren't they?
A bit of werewolf action.
Right.
Anyway, it was an extraordinary spectacle. It had it starred Tony Blair.
Yeah.
That was very exciting to see the ex-Prime Minister in his first lead movie role.
You mean David Frost?
I do. Sorry, I made a mistake there. I mean Kenny Dalglish. Whatever he was called.
Ray.
What was he called out of the Damned United?
Ray Parker Jr.
Ray Parker Jr., that football man. Barry Clough. Brian Clough.
Jenny Clough.
Yeah. So anyway, great to see Tony Blair acting.
Jay Clough.
And also Bill Nye's cheek muscles.
Yeah.
You know that's what he does, Bill Nye, isn't it? He clenches his jaw.
Yes.
And his jaw muscles twinge and he bulges his eyes and talks in that way that he talks. He was doing that again.
I like it.
Oh, it's massively effective.
And who's the lovely lady? Beckinsale?
No, it's a lady who isn't Kate Beckinsale. Because I believe she was married even to the director of the first couple of films, but then they're not married anymore.
She was consumed by werewolves.
Something like that. Anyway, one of the most remarkable things about Underworld Rise of the Lycans, and in a way it was excusable because it's a film about people who are werewolves sometimes, was the level of grunting. And you know, sometimes when you watch quite a poor film, you have to take pleasure in, you know, unusual places. I just started to watch it purely for the grunting.
You're a big fan of grunting anyway. I mean,
grunting. Well, my dad used to love grunting during Wimbledon.
Right.
When we watched the tennis on telly, he'd come in and just laugh at the grunting.
Yeah.
And he particularly followed tennis players who grunted well.
Sure.
And so I've always been a bit obsessed with it. But there's a... Well, listen.
Is that Jimmy Connors?
Because you're an actor, Adam Buxton.
I am,
aren't
yes.
you? You've appeared in such films as Hot Fuzz, Stardust, and what else? Son of Rambo. So you're a professional actor.
Sure.
So I was going to test your grunting skills.
Oh.
Because it's an important weapon in the arsenal of any actor.
Of course, it's one of my big ones.
So let me just set this up by playing some of the best grunting from Underworld Rise of the Lycans. I won't go into what the plot was, but suffice to say, Prime Minister Tony Blair's been captured by the vampires and he's tied up and tortured and kept imprisoned a lot.
Yeah.
And he's brutally flagellated and insulted. And his response mainly is to grunt.
Sure.
All sorts of different grunts he does. Here's a bit of really, really good grunting when he has some big metal darts pulled out of his arm during a battle. Listen to this grunting. That's a good bit of grunting.
That's exactly what I'd sound like when I get stuff pulled out of my arm. Yeah.
I mean, that sounds real. I mean, that's good acting, isn't it? Because I bet you that
the
is
the darts coming out is amazing as
All squishy. And here's a sort of the most extended, a sort of a grunting opus from earlier in the film when Tony Blair is being flagellated, a little similar to the way Jesus was in The Passion of the Christ.
Right.
With sort of a razor-tipped whip or something
hideous. In the Gibbons version.
In Gibbons' version, yeah. But this is from Underworld again.
Sure, sure.
So this is Tony Blair being flagellated and some extraordinary grunting going on from the flagellator and the flagellee. I mean, that's more screaming to an extent, but it's still guttural animalistic noises.
Yeah.
So I was going to test your grunting there. Do you think that was good grunting as an actor?
Yeah, man. He's very good.
He's very good at grunting.
What's his real name?
Michael Sheen.
Michael Sheen.
Mm.
Yeah.
So can I hear you grunting, Adam, as if you're lifting a heavy metal grate?
Okay, sure.
So this is a grunt of strain.
Yeah, grunting 101.
But you're being chased. You're about to die. You've got to escape through
being chased?
Yeah. It's dramatic. All movies are very dramatic. It's got to be dramatic. You've got to heave up this massive metal grate to escape.
Right then.
Go. That's good, man. That was very good.
Yeah.
Okay, how about you've been tied up and the villain is punching you in the face. There's nothing you can do to get back at him.
Yeah.
He's insulting you and punching you. You're frustrated.
Angry.
Let's hear that grunt.
Oh, God!
I mean, that was very, hang on, that's very similar to the previous grunt.
Well...
We need a nuance. Come on, you're an actor.
Right.
Let's have a different sort of grunt.
I'm going to take
You've
it down.
You've been punched. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. That sounds quite low level, that grunting. It just sounds irritating.
You asked me to take it down.
Sorry, you're right. I should be supportive as your director.
Yeah.
Okay, how about this? There's a scene in Underworld Rise of the Lycans where the pouty lady, who isn't Kate Beckinsale and Tony Blair...
Beckinsale.
Is that what she's called?
Yeah, there's no D in there, I don't
Isn't
think.
There? No. I've always put one in. I've done it for 20 years.
A 3D.
So I'm not changing that.
All right.
They're making love. They're doing adult hugs, long side business, lie down tickling, on the edge of a cliff.
Mm-hmm.
And he's basically half over the cliff. Literally, his bottom is on the edge of the cliff and his entire back and head are in the thin air.
Right.
And she's sitting on top of him on the edge of the cliff.
On his head?
It's the... No, no. She's sitting where you would sit if you were making love.
Okay.
Do you get the picture?
Kind of.
They're on the edge of a cliff.
Yeah.
You got to see the film now. It's the Moore magazine position of the week.
Several
couples in the Midlands have died trying to copy it. But it's an extraordinary sex scene and they fade out the grunting. And just have romantic music and close-ups of the edge of breasts and things.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, why am I even talking about this? I've completely lost my...
What kind of grunting do you want from me now?
That grunting.
Oh,
making love on the edge of a cliff is your new grunting command. Okay, go. That's good, because that's sexy and yet perilous.
Exactly.
That's very good. And finally, a couple more. You're attempting to read a book? That's good. I thought there might be more strain.
No, that's the Lavi grunt.
That's the Brosnan. That was my final grunt audition command, as if in trouble on the lav.
Oh, right. This is not good radio.
It's not good,
is it? I mean, we deserve to have our silvers removed.
I think it's very good radio. That was it just ends up with a brilliant Pierce Brosnan impression.
Oh, yeah. That's him in Volcano.
I do recommend Underworld Rise of the Lycans, though.
Yeah, you do.
Only so that people, you know, waste their time to the same degree that I have, and I feel a bit of safety in numbers.
Sure. Very good. Well done. Week well spent.
Thanks, mate.
Oh, this is classic. Check this out. It's classic, man. Oh, no. This is so classic. Yeah, look at that. It's classic. Sort of.
I wish I could meet and hang out and get friendly with David Bowie.
Well, you know, we've only ever had one guest on this programme, which was
Sir Roger Moore.
Lord Roger Moore. and caused us some problems. caused me some problems. But I think if Bowie were to agree to come on this program, we would make our second exception to the no guest rule. Don't you think?
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes we have listeners like the Salt Man or Ollie,
sure,
or Amber Gambler, uh-huh, you know, the DJ guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But in terms of famous people, if Bowie wanted to come on this show, it would be a massive privilege for him.
Absolutely fine. He would be very excited, wouldn't he?
He'd be so excited. I mean, when his people hear this, it's going to be like electricity buzzing through Bowie Corp. Mr. Bowie.
Oh, was it?
We've just had word from the Adam and Joe radio show on BBC Six Music that they're prepared to have you on as a guest. They haven't had a guest since Lord Roger Moore.
Lord Sir Roger Moore went on the Adam and Joe show on BBC Six Music.
He did. It was a disaster, but still, for Lord Moore, it was an extraordinary privilege.
Oh, hang on a second. I think I heard about this. Was this when Joe Cornish was unable to actually speak?
Yes.
To Lord Sir Roger, yes, because he was so overwhelmed.
It was brilliant. It was very charming and human.
By his bondosity.
Yes, it was very sweet. Not unprofessional at all.
Not pathetic is what I heard.
No, not pathetic and incapable, but very charming and human and sweet. But they've said you can go on, Lord Bowie.
Well, I've got a very busy week coming up. I'm doing a couple of installations and also recording a new album with Bubba Marl. But I'd love to come in. I'll clear my decks and bring in some jungle music. Is that okay?
Yes. We'll call the studio, the producer James, and arrange it now. Thank you, Lord Bowie.
And was.
Noises, beeping noises.
Listen, I've got to correct some little mistakes I made. Simon Martin has kindly emailed in to point out that Takashi Miike didn't... No one's going to care about this apart from me and Simon. But Takashi Miike didn't direct Midnight Meat Train. It was Ruhei Kitamura who directed Versus. It's a completely different kettle of fish.
I would say a lot of people would care about
that. No, but for
that.
Asian cinema fans, that's a terrible, sleepy Saturday morning
mistake. For any kind of
and
cinema
fan. And I think
fan.
I even said it last week as well, yeah, on the podcast one. Idiot hole. How am I going to hold my head up at,
you know,
nerd conventions?
I didn't say anything in the week, but my mum immediately was on the phone.
Was she?
Joe, did I hear right? Did you just say that Takashi Miike directed Meat Train? What an idiot hole.
That's depressing. I'm sorry. I apologise to your mum.
Yeah.
Anyway, listen, it's time for some more Text the Nations. Here's another extraordinary listener-made jingle, right?
Yes, this is from someone called Zav. I don't know if it's not Zavi, is it? Otherwise he'd be going out of business. Shut up. This is Zav's jingle, and it's a kind of a Stephen Hawking-type Text the Nation effort.
Explanation, text, what if I don't want to? Explanation, but I'm using email, is that a problem? It doesn't matter,
Wow, it's frightening, isn't it? Both of those jingles we've used this morning sort of portend a future of kind of very crappy robots taking over.
Radiohead-style
like
technological alienation.
Yeah, wouldn't that be disappointing if instead of a sort of sexy Terminator-style apocalyptic future, there was a sort of Steve Jobs, PC World, sort of laptop-style takeover, and they all spoke like those automatic voices?
I think it would be exciting and fun.
It'd be more dealable with, wouldn't it? Less frightening.
Well, at least you would know who was who. The scary thing is when you can't tell who's human and who's a robot.
Well, that's not going to happen for a bit, is it? Because the voices are still very synthesized.
Yeah, still rubbish.
Yeah. Anyway, Text the Nation this week is about sort of disgusting personal habits that you have that you do almost subconsciously in company.
We were talking a little bit about, we were just getting to the whole area of smelling things before. Are you someone that smells your socks?
No.
One of the nice bits in A Fish Called Wanda is when John Cleese's character Archie Leach is sat on his bed, and they're sort of illustrating the passionless marriage that he has. And he sort of very robotically sits down on his bed, removes his socks and just gives them a little sniff before climbing into bed. And I it's something that I've done. Have you never done that?
To see whether they need washing or not.
Is that the theory?
I might do that, yeah. Or sniff the underarm of a used shirt to see whether you can get another day
out of it. Well, I always assume that it's going to need washing. Sometimes I just like to have a little sniff out of curiosity.
Here are some stuff we've had from listeners. Mimi says, I have a habit. I smell the sweat created by my watch on my wrist.
Ah,
it's addictive.
Yes.
When you start to smell it, it's difficult to get away from it. This is something people used to do at school, didn't they?
Sure.
Especially with leather watch straps, they can build up quite a stinky little sweat.
And I've never done that. Is it? It's a nice stink, is it?
No, it's not. It's unpleasant. But you see, this is the thing.
You keep coming back for it.
It's like smelling your own airborne toxic events. Mm. There's something fascinating about it.
Yeah. Here's one from Erica. I like, really, truly enjoy when I'm alone, trying not to swallow my spit and seeing how much I can keep in my mouth before I drool on myself.
Wow, I do remember that from when I was littler.
Do you?
Yeah.
Erica, are you not? Are you sure Erica isn't in some sort of an institution?
Like a big lake of spittle. I do remember that. The other one, of course, is after you've drunk some kind of chemically fizzy pop, your spit gets a certain consistency that enables you to do very long drools, which you can then retract into your mouth. That's a
lovely,
slightly different thing.
Lovely. But... Jo, on her way to Cornwall, I think it's a her because it's a J-O, says my husband, and she's got a husband, well, you know that. Well, anyway, let's talk about this. My husband was once given a key ring with his friend's long toenail on it, which he'd grown especially for it.
Oh, dear.
So he'd grown his toenail extra long and turned it into a key ring.
Toenail as well. That's grim.
Jim from Wrexham. I pick out the open inverted commas eye gold. Close inverted commas, subconsciously mid-conversation and eat it.
Oh, I've never heard of anyone actually eating
No, that's peculiar. I'd like to know what it tastes like.
Eye gold. He's talking about sleep, some people call it, don't they?
Yeah, that builds up in your eye.
Eye gunk.
Here's an extraordinary
eye
one.
Eye gold.
this is anonymous, I think, for reasons that'll become obvious. When he's watching TV, my stepdad likes to regurgitate bits of dinner into his mouth, not so subtly disguised as coughing. He then chews on whatever treasures he's found and swallows it back down. He thinks no one's watching, but me and my sister know exactly what's going on. He's probably pleased when we have to leave the room in disgust so he can carry on with more gusto. That's pretty revolting.
That is a good one.
It was one amazing one.
Have you never done that?
Everyone's done that, I think.
From time to
time. And you pick your teeth. I mean, you're not going to spit it out, are you? You just give it a little munch.
And you do pretend. You do. But the thing is that you get busted every now and again, right? Because everyone knows you finished your meal a while ago. Suddenly, why is he chewing still?
Well, it's the idea of this guy coughing. And then the little dramatic pause you'd leave. You don't do it straight away because that's too obvious. You'd leave a little pause and then... and then do the chewing.
Sometimes it's quite welcome.
What, for the people like around
second,
you?
No, for the person who is
of course.
A little second course.
It's tasty, yeah. But listen, here's the most revolting one from John in Hounslow. I used to have a disgusting habit, which I ceased upon quitting eating Wotsits. While eating the delicious salty puffs, I would chew plenty at once, then grab a fresh Wotsit and spit out the chewed up mass of mashed cheesy puff gunk into a sort of ball on the end so it resembled a savoury lollipop.
What? Sorry. Your computer just restarted in absolute revulsion.
Then I placed it back into the packet and let it solidify over a few minutes. Then I would eat it again. It had a different texture and tasted like a glorious treat I made up myself.
Sweet. Baby
observers were known to throw up.
I'm sure.
So that's amazing. That's like a whole new manufacturing process. I mean, that's sort of going into animal kingdom behavior, isn't it?
That's going beyond.
That's becoming subhuman.
Mother Nature has not gotten anything like that in its amazingly bizarre locker.
I like to listen to Adam and Joe, but I listen to the podcast, not the live show. I used to feel acute frustration because I couldn't join in with Text the Nation. But now my troubles have disappeared because Retro Text the Nation's here. And now my letter might be read out instead of thrown in the trash and forgotten about.
It's time for Retro Text the Nation, listeners. This is a chance for people who don't listen to the live show but listen to the podcast to get involved in Text the Nation. You can send in your responses to the previous week's subject, yeah? When I say previous weeks, I mean the previous week's live show. There's never been a way to explain this clearly or properly, but you get the idea.
So, for example, this week, the Text the Nation is about sort of disgusting personal habits. You can get those ideas coming in during the week for next week's podcast.
Exactly.
Exactly.
It's easy.
Retro Text the Nation this week is about last week's Text the Nation subject. I'm a dog. Which was about being home alone And here is a message that came in from Rosa Wicks in Beaconsfield.
Yeah, this is weird things you do when you're left at home alone that you would on no account do when other people were there.
Say Beaconsfield or Beaconsfield?
Beaconsfield.
Beaconsfield. She says, "Hello, wavy." That's like the word wavy with two stars next to it.
Right. What's she doing there, waving?
I think she's waving.
That's nice.
"Hello, wavy. When I'm home alone, being only 15, I tend to gather all 18-rated DVDs in my house and watch them in quick succession. My favourite was when watching Saw and finding utter joy, not in watching people cut their own feet off, which made me feel sick, but in laughing at what my mum would think if she knew I was watching other people cut their own feet off. I also skip around the house, not naked, but dressed in one of those magic scarves which I manage somehow to slip over my head and talk to myself in a Cartman voice. Bye, wavy." Rosa Wicks from Beaconsfield.
She's cool.
Wavy. I like that. I'm going to start saying that instead of actually waving at people. Hey, wavy.
I think her parents should lock away the 18-rated DVDs because they've been rated 18 for a specific reason.
That's true, isn't it?
They're not allowed. I mean, they will disturb and corrupt the minds, the unformed brain matter of the under-18s.
Of an impressionable 15-year-old.
And we're going to send that email to the police.
Yeah, watch out, Rosa.
And they're probably going to raid your house and arrest your parents.
No more foot-cutting off fun for you.
Here's another one that came in from Dan Buttery. He says, "Hi, Adam and Joe. When my other half goes away, I tend to follow a tried-and-tested 10-point routine. This involves, 1, getting up late, going to the supermarket for a large amount of alcohol. 2, waiting till noon so I can legitimately start drinking. 3, taking off all my clothes apart from my pants. 4, smoking in the house. 5, playing on my Xbox solidly. 6, realizing by about 10 in the evening I've eaten nothing at all and stumbling drunkenly to the kebab van. 7, falling asleep stroke passing out on the sofa. 8, waking up next morning to the ungodly stink that is stale booze, ciggies and a half-eaten kebab with a raging hangover. Ugh. 9, feeling sorry for myself for most of the day. 10, tidying up the house, going to bed early, only to repeat it all the next day. And so on in 2-day cycles until the better half gets home, convinced that I fall apart every time she goes away. Ah, good times."
Good times,
Dan
indeed.
Buttery.
You know, I think it's something a lot of men can relate to, that one.
Yeah.
And I can certainly relate to it. And we've had a sort of similar one that outlines, in diary form, a week in the life of John Worksop. He says, "Hi, Adam and Joe. My wife, Vic, and our baby son, Harry, recently went away to stay with some friends for a few days. I couldn't get any time off work, so I was left home alone. I very rarely drink during the week. I have a healthy diet, free of junk food. And as our 8-month-old son loves getting up around 6 a.m., I normally get to bed at a very reasonable hour. Here's a short diary of what I got up to when Vic and Harry were away. Wednesday. Dropped Vic and Harry off at the airport. Headed home for the football. Watched football with 2 quarter-pound beef burgers, lovingly prepared on my George Foreman grill. 2 huge slices of birthday cake I then had. And 6 bottles of Beck's. I went to bed feeling slightly drunk and very sick at 2 a.m. after 3 hours of Nintendo Wii. Thursday. Struggled through the day at work. Went home to a feast of pizza and 6 more bottles of Beck's. Stayed up till 2 a.m. playing on the Wii. Friday. Up at work at 6:30 feeling very tired and hungover. Made it through the day. Got home, had a feast of hot dogs, cake, Beck's, and a bottle of red wine. I ran out of Beck's and the wine is all I could find. Watched Pulp Fiction and then played on the Wii till about 1 a.m. Saturday, woke up at 10 feeling very hungover and sick. Realised today was the day that Vic and Harry got home. Operation Tidy Up. Went to McDonald's for dinner. Felt sick. Was sick. Had a nap. Picked up Vic and Harry and told them how I'd spent most of the time just pottering around the house and getting a few jobs done. If I lived on my own, I'd probably be dead within a year. Thanks, John in Worksop."
Pottering around the house. Do you think that's a term people use to conceal a lot of, illicit behaviour?
Yeah, definitely.
Because my girlfriend uses the word pottering a lot.
Is she?
She always says that. What have you, when I've been away for the day working or something, what have you been up to? Oh, just pottering. My mental image was of her pottering. No. Bit of washing up, gardening. No.
Actually, she's 100% nude. just snorting vim, running around the house, gargling champagne and screaming at the top of her voice.
What's she screaming?
"I'm a sexy woman! Look at me running in the nude! I'm a sexy woman! I'm going to eat a lot of booze and lots of food!"
Wow. I must hide. I must pretend I'm going out and instead hide.
Yeah.
And watch. That's the logical reaction to a lot of these secret things. Pretend you're going away, but either set cameras up or hide. And then observe.
Man, imagine the stuff.
That's a future Text the Nation, stuff you've caught your partner doing.
Ooh. Tasty. Yeah. Thank you so much for all your texts and emails on the subject of being home alone.
Retro Text the Nation will probably return in next week's podcast. We like to leave a little bit of excitement and suspense and mystery.
You never know, it comes and goes. Ooh. Like a ghost.
On with the podcast.
Or a postman.
You needed cheering up because you were feeling rather low. But now you're doing brilliant thanks to Adam and to Joe and their podcast.
Okay, it's time for another kind of a feature. We've turned this into a sort of a feature. We started out as a textination. I can't remember how it started out. But anyway, it's turned into a sort of feature because people keep sending in their ideas for songs, pop songs they customize in order to fit in with various things they might be doing. We call this pop-propriation.
Yeah, sort of to soundtrack mundane tasks, yeah. You customize a popular lyric.
I've done a little jingle for it even.
Uh-oh.
This might be one of these jingles that gets played once and never again because it's a little bit weird. Do you want to hear it?
Yes, I do.
Here it is.
I like to change the lyrics of songs from time to time.
Lock the taskbar.
To make them refer to things I do.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Oh
I call yeah, it pop-propriation, yeah. And as far as I'm aware, it isn't a crime. I wonder if it's something you do too.
Yes it is, yes it is, yes it is.
It's a little groove I put together. This is from Grant.
La 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 la.
I love that song. Dear Adam and Joe, just thought I'd drop you a note to let you know of another example of songs mutated into mundane activities in the same way as locking the taskbar, which a lot of people emailed us about. Lock the taskbar. Every month, I have to endure the mindless tedium of completing my expenses claim, part of which is the need to supply my lovely colleagues in finance with all types of fuel receipts detailing whether or not my company can claim back on the VAT. The tediousness of this chore is lightened considerably by the singing of, to the tune of This Is Not America by David Bowie, this is not a VAT receipt. No, this is not.
La 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 la. Little piece of receipt. Little piece of bill has gone. Oh, I love that song. Play that next week.
He says, knowing your love of David Bowie, I thought this might amuse. Thanks for the show, he says. Thanks, Grant.
Thanks for listening, Grant. This is one from Mark Logue. L-O-G-U-E. Logue.
L-O-G-U-E. Logue.
Logue. Here's one from Mark Logue. A director friend of mine used to sit in with me while editing videos, singing, "All you ever do is digitize," to the tune of "All You Ever Do Is Criticize" by Alexander O'Neill. That's a good one.
That is a good one. All you ever... Matt Botti.
Matt Botti?
That's a good name, isn't it?
Yeah, not Shiny Botti.
No, no. Matt. He's got a special spray.
He does. To non-reflective take the shine Botti.
Off. Matt Botti.
How's Botti? Potti? How's it spelled?
Botti. B-O-T-T-Y. All right. It's the proper Botti.
Yeah, good one.
Matt Botti says, "Hi Adam, hi Joe. I've just realised I have a tasty song that I sing when eating hummus."
Poor Matt Botti. Sorry to put you through that. He must have been gone through that all his whole life.
Well, of course.
Here's another couple of idiots doing it.
Come on, Bottoms, Botti face, Botti man. Obviously, he's going to get that. Otherwise, he'd change his name. He's happy to be a Botti.
Do you think? I hope
yeah.
so. Anyway, hummus.
Hummus, right? When he's eating hummus, he sings hummus. Hummus, moonlight sleeping on the midnight lake. Hummus.
What's that?
Hummus. Ladysmith, Black Mambazo. Homeless.
Homeless.
Hummus. Homeless. We are hummus.
I always want to sing Diamonds on the Soles of Her Shoe. After that.
Well, he's
Paul
got
Simon,
moonlight sleeping on the midnight lake. Is that really what they sing in there? I don't think so. I think it's African words they're singing. I'm not sure. Hummus. Hummus.
This is from Richard Phippin. When in a good mood and really chuffed to be at home after a long commute, and I mean that, I don't sing this unless I'm in a great mood. I like to sing to the tune of Snow White's Hi-Ho. I'm home, I'm home, I'm home, I'm home, I'm home. I'm changing into comfy clothes. I'm home, I'm home, I'm home, I'm home.
I'm home. That's very nice.
That's nice.
I can
well
do
done,
that
Richard
myself
Phippin.
Now. When I get home today, I'm going to sing that.
Talking, 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 talking.
A friend of mine has a good inverted name for Susan Boyle that maybe everyone's thought of, but just reversing the first letter, so she's called Booze and Soil.
Aww.
She sort of does look a bit like she's made of booze and soil.
Yeah.
Is that rude?
Well, it technically is rude. You wouldn't say it to her face, would you?
No, I wouldn't. That's the definition of rude.
That is the definition of rude.
Maybe I would say it to her face. There's been a sort of a... Sorry.
Well, I was going to say I've missed out on all
BGT.
All the BGT action this week because I've been rehearsing for this show I'm doing and my TV doesn't work in the house I'm staying in. So
there's
I haven't been able to see anything.
A war in the Cornballs household because I hate sport. I don't hate it, but I dislike it.
Yeah, you're bored by it.
Yeah, and my girlfriend loves it. She loves the footy.
It's weird.
It's a weird sort of gender reversal that would confuse advertisers.
Mm.
And so I've been very much supporting Britain's Got Talent and, you know, the sport of stupid showbiz.
Yeah.
And, of course, there were big finals last weekend. There was the big football final.
Getting emotional just thinking about
the footy cup.
the king of the ball.
What was it? Barcelona versus Man U for the king of Coventry. What was it?
Madrid, Real.
European Cup.
There you go. You don't know either, do you, Adam? It's not just me.
Germany versus ignoramus. Swissland.
Anyway, that was on Wednesday, right? They had to stop the Britain's Got Talent live finals to let this football match happen. So it was a real war of showbiz versus footy biz.
The final countdown.
The football lost. It was 2-0. It was a hugely disappointing game, right? No, it wasn't. It was hugely disappointing. My James girlfriend was asleep good. After about 20 minutes.
Did she actually
Come
say
on,
the
it
words,
was an anticlimax.
This is hugely disappointing.
Man, you played really badly. Messi did some good work. Did he score the goals? Well, you scored one of them. One of the goals. Look, I'm talking about
this
football.
Is very impressive,
I said, Messi.
Joe. You look manly.
I sat there and watched some of it with her to get up to speed. I was, you know, because I forced her to watch Britain's Got Talent.
Yeah.
Anyway, I felt that BGT won. Because it was a spectacular week. Sure. It could be said that there's too much Britain's Got Talent.
All I heard was that Susan Boyle lost her rag earlier in the week.
That was off camera.
Some people.
Yeah, that was off camera. That wasn't on the actual show.
And I bet that the first thing I thought was that I bet they're goading her, you know what I mean? Just to get a story out of her.
It seems the program's got so big. It's getting, 15 million viewers? I mean, it's getting an enormous
It's uniting the country
view.
In
it,
a way that
really
no
is.
TV show
well,
has
well, but
for
in
a, while.
A way that's overwhelming the performers.
Right.
The performers can't handle it. You know, it started out as a little sort of local audition. And suddenly, within a month or two, they're in front of 15 million people.
I can't believe Stavros Flatley's still on there. I mean, it's
they're brilliant.
I mean, I'm not saying they're rubbish, but the best of all the people they saw?
They are. What I like about that program is it could be the turn of the century, or it could even be 200 years ago. It could be Dickensian. You know, what's her name? The lady in the middle? Gloria Honeyford? Amanda Holden.
Oh, Holden, right.
She's like the most popular brassy... street lady. Do you know what I mean? Fanny Crockett. I've tried to put that politely, but she's like, oh, Fanny Crockett.
Guinevere Tuppence.
Exactly, Guinevere Tuppence. Simon Cowell is like sort of Judge Fustles or something, or some Dickensian judge character. And then, what's his name? Piers Morgan is like the sort of the big businessman.
He's like Mr. Bumble from the
Mr.
Workhouse.
Mr. Bumble, exactly.
Yeah.
And then, because you could easily spot Samuel Pepys in the audience of Britain's Got Talent with a quill pen.
Waving his
taking
wig.
Taking notes.
Sure.
I think exact in music halls up and down the country 200 years ago, there were big fat Greek men doing line dancing.
Guinevere is the wrong name for Holden. Sally Tuppence.
Sally Tuppence. Come along, Sally Tuppence. Will you judge the little orphans in there?
Oh, my skirts are all in a tither.
Exactly. It's so Victorian. And it has a timeless quality that I think unites the country.
Mm.
The end, goodbye.
But it's as far as I can tell, it's all the acts from the very first show have made it through to the final.
Yeah, you think top heavy, all the talent was at the top.
Yeah, all the talent was right there at the
top. There's some hopeless cases have got through, to be honest. Some really, the singing lady and the flowers.
What about the sexy man and the saxophone? Did he make it through?
Sexy saxophone, he did make it through. He's so humble. That's his key thing, humility. That's the way we're going to win next year, because we're going to enter next year.
Are we?
It's going to be a big thing. We're going to talk about it on the program.
Right.
We're going to audition. What's your talent?
My talent? Groaning.
Is it? Grunting.
Yeah. Grunting and groaning.
Grunting
to
and
order.
Groaning. I'm thinking of doing singing and magic.
Are you?
Combined. I've got some magic skills.
You're good at both.
I could do some singing and some magic.
I haven't got a single
and
talent.
Maybe get my cat in there performing somehow.
What the heck would I do?
I think if you could combine an animal act with singing and magic, I mean, that'll blow their socks off.
I could regurgitate some steak.
You could be like the regurgitator.
Chew it very subtly.
There's lots of things you could do. You could act.
I could do a little act.
You could do a scene from a
film. I could do Jack Nicholson's speech from
A Few Good Men.
A Few Good Men, yeah.
Yes. That's sure to win.
Podcast. That is all there is of the podcast. It is all over.
Well, that's it for this week's podcast, listeners. Thanks a lot for listening and everything, and everyone who's emailed and texted. Thanks for that. We love your emails and texts.
Have you met any listeners recently?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, were they nice?
Yeah, they're always nice. That's the thing about our listeners. Yeah, they tend to be really good, civilized people.
I met Tom this week.
Who's Tom?
Do you know Tom?
Well, we've got several listeners called Tom Adam.
No, this one was called Tom, and he was really nice. Came up to me in a pub.
Did he?
South London.
Yeah.
He's a charity worker.
Right.
He was really nice.
Was he?
Yeah. I felt a bit nervous, though. Like, he was a tiny bit nervous, and that made me nervous. And I really wanted to relax because he was such a nice chap.
Right. And did you have sex?
No. We kissed.
Right.
Does that count?
Yeah.
It was embarrassing
because
a couple of men in there. I haven't really done anything like that in public before.
I only said that because just your description of the nervousness felt like some sort of...
Well,
romantic.
It was a funny thing. It was like being on a date or something.
There was an assumed closeness between you.
Yeah, he knew more about me than I did about him, and
yeah.
I didn't want to let him down.
No,
but it was a. I really felt proud though. I just thought I'm so pleased that people like that listen to the show. You know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, when the Big Black Squadron, operation goes down,
mm-hmm.
people will see just how nice our listeners are.
Right.
Mm.
Look over there, the bloke with an egg in his mouth with Black Squadron written on his forehead. He's nice.
Exactly. We'll be back next week live on BBC Six Music from 9 in the morning till noon, and there'll be a new podcast this time next week.
Have a good sunny week. Don't forget to take precautions and cover up your skin with lots of cream. No more peeling that skin off, okay?
Yeah.
Take care. Love you. Bye.
Bye.
If you enjoyed the Adam and Joe podcast, then why not try the John Richardson podcast? Download it now. bbc.co.uk/6music.
I think that it should be a new thing in the world that there are little bowls around the place, like ashtrays used to be in the old days, and everyone just puts their
bits of their body
in the bowl, and at the end of the day they either get put in the bin or fed to the kids. That's a little sort of snacking bowl.
It's a nice idea. I mean, we recycle so much else.